Search and Rescue, Part 3. Well, once again, you guys have blown me away with your staggering amount of responses to my stories. There's no way I can respond to each one of you individually, so I'm just going to address some common things again and then move on to the stories. I'm going to write as many as I can think of, in addition to the ones that my friends have given me, and I probably won't update again until I get a chance to answer some questions that I myself have for my superiors. All right, so the common questions I found you all had were, I'm not comfortable talking about where exactly I work, unfortunately. In all reality, some of the things I mentioned here could get me in a lot of trouble or fired, so it's best if I just don't discuss that too much. I will say that I'm in the United States. I'm in an area that is compromised of a great deal of wilderness. We're talking hundreds of miles of thick forest within a mountain range and a few lakes. There is still a great amount of interest in the stairs, and lucky for you guys, my friend had a story that I think you'll be very interested in. I'll go into that more at the end of this update. As for whether or not I have ever thought of asking my superiors about them, I have, but again, I don't want to risk my job. However, one of my superiors no longer works as an SAR officer and might possibly be willing to talk to me about it, but I'll have to speak to him later on in the week, and I will let you know what comes of it. As far as advice on becoming an SAR officer, I think the best advice I can give is to be diligent and contact your local Forest Service office and see if they need any help or volunteers. It's a great job despite the occasional tragic situations, and I wouldn't want to do anything else. All right, let's move on to the stories. The first happened on a case that I went out on right after I got out of training, and it was still pretty new and everything to me. Before I took this job, I was a volunteer, so I had a basic idea of what to expect, but on those calls, you're mostly just dealing with finding lost people after vets have found signs of them. As an SAR officer, you go out on all kinds of cases, from animal bites to heart attacks. This case got called in early in the morning from a young couple who were up on one of the trails that goes by the lake. The husband was completely hysterical, and we couldn't figure out what was going on. We could hear the woman screaming in the background, and he was begging us to come up there right away. When we got there, we see him holding his wife, and she's got something in her arms. She's screaming these awful, almost animal-like screams, and she's sobbing. He sees us, and he screams at us to help them, to please get an ambulance up there. Now, obviously, we can't just drive an ambulance up a walking path, so we ask him if his wife needs help or if she can walk on her own. He's hysterical, but he manages to tell us that it's not his wife that needs help. I go over while one of the vets tries to calm him down and ask the wife what's going on. She's rocking, holding something, and just shrieking over and over. I crouch down and see what she's holding. It's covered with blood. That's when I notice the sling on her front and my heart sinks. I ask her to tell me what's going on, and I sort of pry her arms gently open so I can see what she's holding. It's her baby, obviously dead. His head is caved in on one side, and he's covered in scratches. Now, I've seen dead bodies before, but something about the whole situation hits me hard. I have to take a second to compose myself, and I get up and go to the other vets who's standing by. I tell him that it's a dead kid, and he sort of pats my shoulder and tells me he'll deal with it. It took us over an hour to get the woman to let us see her kid. Every time we would try to take him from her, she flipped out and would tell us we can't have him and that he'll be okay if we just leave her alone with him to help. But eventually, one of the vets managed to calm her down, and she gives us the body. We took it back to the med area, but when the EMT showed up, he said that there was no sign of life. He died instantly when the trauma to his head happened. I was good buddies with one of the nurses who met them at the hospital, and she told me later what happened. Turns out the couple had been walking with the baby in the sling, and they stopped because the kid was fussing. The dad takes the kid and is holding him, looking over the gully by the path. The mom comes to stand next to him, but she ends up stepping on a loose patch of soil and she trips. She falls into the dad, who drops the kid, who ends up falling about 20 feet down this little gully onto the rocks at the bottom. The dad climbed down and recovered the kid, but he'd fallen right on his head and was dead by the time he got there. The baby was only about 15 months old, and it was a total freak accident, a series of events that coincided into the worst possible outcome. Probably one of the most awful calls I've ever been on. I haven't seen a lot of animal bites in my time as an SAR officer, mostly because there aren't that many animals that come to the area. While there are bears in the area, they tend to stay pretty far away from people, and sightings are usually unusual. Most of the animals you'll see are small ones, like coyotes, raccoons, or skunks. What we do see frequently, though, are moose. And let me tell you, moose are nasty fuckers. They'll chase you after anything for any reason, and God help you if you get between a female and its baby. One of the more amusing calls was a guy who'd gotten chased down by an absolutely massive male moose and was stuck up a tree. It took us almost an hour to get him down, and when he finally was on solid ground, he looks at me and says, "God damn, them fuckers are big up close." I guess that's not really a scary story, but we still had a laugh about that one. I honestly don't know how I'd forgotten this story, but it is by far the scariest thing that's happened to me. So I guess maybe I've tried for so long to forget about it that it just didn't come to my mind right away. As someone who spends literally all their time in the woods, you don't ever want to let yourself get scared of being alone or out in the middle of nowhere. That's why when you have experience like this, you tend to just forget about them and move on. This is, to date, the only thing that has ever made me seriously consider if this job was the right one for me. I don't really like talking about it much, but I'll do my best to relay it to you as I remember. As I recall, this took place right at the end of spring. It was a typical lost child call. A four-year-old girl had wandered away from her family's campsite and had been missing for about 2 hours. Her parents were completely despondent and told us what most parents do. "My kid would never wander away. She's so good about staying close. She's never done anything like this before." We assured the parents that we'll do everything we can to find her, and we spread out into a standard search formation. I was partnered with one of my good buddies, and we were sort of casually holding conversation while we hiked. I know it sounds callous, but you kind of do that sort of thing. You become desensitized when you've done it long enough. It becomes the norm, and I think to a certain extent, you have to learn to desensitize yourself in order to work this job. We searched for 2 good hours, going well beyond where we think she could go and come out into a small valley when something makes us both stop in unison. We freeze and look at each other, and there's almost a sensation like a plane depressurizing. My ears pop, and I have this odd sensation of having dropped about 10 feet. I start to ask my buddy if he felt that, but before I can, we hear the loudest sound I've ever heard in my life. It almost sounded like a freight train passing directly by us, but it's coming from every direction at once, including above and below us. He screams something to me, but I can't hear him over this deafening roar. Understandably freaked out, we look all around us trying to find the source of the sound, but neither of us see anything. Of course, my first thought is a landslide, and we're not near cliffs, so it can't be that. And if it was, it would have hit us by now. The sound goes on, and we're trying to yell at each other, but even standing close together, we can't hear anything but this sound. Then all of a sudden, it stops. Like someone threw off a switch and cut it off. We stand there for a second, perfectly still, and slowly the normal sounds of the woods come back. He asked me what the fuck just happened, but I just kind of shrug, and we stand there looking at each other for a minute. I get on the radio and ask if anyone else just heard the end of the fucking world, but no one else has heard it, even though we're all in shouting distance of each other. My buddy and I just sort of shrug it off and keep going. About an hour later, we all check up on the radios and no one's found the little girl. Most of the time, we won't search when it gets dark, but because we don't have any kind of lead on her, a few of us decide to keep going. At this point, I'm hoping beyond hope that we find her, because while I might not like kids, the idea of them being alone in the woods at night is awful. The woods can be intimidating to kids in daylight, and at night, well, it's a whole different beast. But we're not seeing any signs of her or getting any responses, and around midnight, we decide to turn around and head back to the rendezvous point. We're about halfway back when my buddy stops and shines his light to the right of us into a really thick deadfall or a group of trees. I ask him if he's heard a response, but he just tells me to be quiet and listen. And I do. And in the distance, I can hear what sounds like a kid crying. We both call the girl's name and listen for any kind of response, but it's just this really faint crying. We head in the direction of this deadfall and go around it, calling her name over and over. And as we get closer to the crying, I start getting this weird feeling in my gut, and I tell my buddy that something isn't right. He tells me he feels the same way, but he can't figure out what it is. We stop where we are and call the girl's name again. And at the same time, we both figure it out. The crying is on a loop. It's the same little hitching sob, then wail, then quiet hiccup, repeat over and over. It's exactly the same every time. And without saying another word, we both take off running. It's the only time I've ever lost my composure like that, but something about it was so incredibly wrong, and neither of us wanted to stay around to find out anymore. When we get back to the rendezvous, we ask if anyone else has heard anything strange, but no one else knew what we were talking about. I know it sounds sort of anticlimactic, but the call fucked me up for a long time. As for the little girl, we never found a trace of her. We keep an eye out for her, like we do all of the other ones we haven't found, but frankly, I doubt we'll ever find anything. Of the missing persons calls I've gone out on, only a handful ever result in a complete disappearance, meaning no trace of the person and no body ever found. But sometimes, finding a body just leads to more questions than answers. Here are some of the bodies we found that have become infamous in our team. A teenage boy whose remains were recovered almost a year after he vanished. We found the top of his skull, two finger bones, and his camera almost 40 miles from where he was last seen. The camera, sadly, was destroyed. The pelvis of an older man who had vanished a month earlier. That was all we found. The lower jaw and right foot of a two-year-old boy on the highest peak of the ridge in the southern part of the park. The body of a 10-year-old girl with Down syndrome almost 20 miles from where she had vanished. She had died of exposure 3 weeks after going missing. All of her clothes were intact except for her shoes and jacket. There were berries and cooked meat in her stomach when they did the autopsy. The coroner said it appeared as if someone had been taking care of her, and there were no suspects ever identified. The frozen body of a one-year-old baby found a week after vanishing in the hollow trunk of a tree 10 miles from the area where he was last seen. There was fresh milk found in its stomach, but his tongue was gone. A single vertebrae and right kneecap of a three-year-old girl found in the snow almost 20 miles from the campground her family had been at the previous summer. Now, onto a couple of the stories my friend told me. I mentioned that you were all interested in the stairs, and you're in luck. He's had a closer encounter with them than me. Though he doesn't have any explanation for them, he does have a bit more experience with them than I do. My buddy has been an SAR officer for about 7 years. He started when he was a junior in college, and he had a very similar experience when he first encountered the stairs. His trainer told him almost the same thing mine did, which was never to go near them, touch them, or ascend them. And for the first year, he did just that. But apparently his curiosity got the better of him, and on one call, he broke away from the line and went to go check. He said that there were a pair of stairs about 10 miles out from a path where a teenage girl had vanished, and the dogs were following a scent. He was on his own, lagging behind the main group when he saw a set of stairs off to his left. They looked like they were from a new house because the carpeting was pristine and white. He said that he got closer and he didn't feel any different or hear any weird noises. He was expecting something to happen, like bleeding from his ears or collapsing, but he got right up next to them and didn't feel anything. The only thing, he said, was that The only thing he said that was kind of odd was that there was absolutely no debris on the steps, no dirt, leaves, dust, or anything, and there didn't appear to be any signs of animal or insect activity in the immediate area, which he found strange. It was less like things were avoiding them and more like they just happened to be there in a relatively barren part of the forest. He touched the stairs and didn't feel anything except for that sort of sticky feeling you get from new carpet. Making sure his radio was on, he slowly climbed the stairs. He said it was terrifying because there was no way that he couldn't feel that way because they had been stigmatized. He wasn't really sure what was going to happen to him. He joked that he was half expected to be teleported to some other dimension and the other half was watching for a UFO to come swooping down. But he got to the top with a little jolt of adrenaline and there was nothing to be said. He described it as feeling, though, like you get when you're a part of a government building that you have no business being in. And if something was going to come out and happen, it would. Or that somebody was going to come out and arrest you or shoot you in the back of the head at any second. He tried to brush it off, but the feeling got stronger and stronger. And that's when he realized that he couldn't hear anything anymore. The sounds of the forest were gone and he couldn't hear his own breathing. It was like some weird, awful tinnitus, but more oppressive. He climbed back down and rejoined the search and didn't mention what he'd done, but he said the weirdest part came after. His trainer was waiting back at the Welcome Center after the search ended for the day and cornered him before he could leave. He said his trainer had the look of intense anger and he couldn't tell what was wrong. "You went up them, didn't you?" My buddy said it was just phrased as a question. He asked his trainer how he knew. The trainer just shook his head. "Because we didn't find her. The dogs lost her scent." My buddy asked what he had done to do that, and the trainer asked how long he'd been on the stairs, and my buddy said no more than a minute. The trainer gave him this really awful, almost dead-eyed look and told him that if he ever went up another set of stairs again, he'd be fired immediately. The trainer walked away, and I guess he's never answered any of the questions my buddy had asked him about since. The last story I'll share from him was one that took place relatively recently, only a few months ago. They were doing a recon for mountain lions because there had been several reportings of sightings in the last couple days. One of our jobs is to scout out areas where these animals are seen to ensure that if they are in the area, we can warn people and close off the trails. He was out on his own in a very heavily forested part of the park. He was out there without anybody else, and he heard what sounded like a woman screaming in the distance. It was dusk. Now, as most of you know, when a mountain lion screams, it sounds almost exactly like a woman being brutally murdered. It's unsettling, but far from abnormal. My buddy radioed back and let ops know that he'd heard one and that he was going to keep going to see if he could figure out where the territory started. He heard the mountain lion scream a couple more times, always from the same spot, and determined the approximate area of the mountain lion's territory. He was about to head back when he heard another scream, this time within only a few yards of him. Of course, he freaks out and starts heading back at a much faster pace because the last thing he wants is to run into a goddamn mountain lion and get mauled to death. As he got back on the path and started heading back, the screaming followed him and he broke into a jog. When he was about a mile from ops, the screaming stopped and he turned around to see if it was following him. It was almost night by this point and he said that in the distance, just before the path rounded a corner, he could see what looked like a male figure. He called out to them, warning them that the paths were closed and that he needed to come back to the Welcome Center. The figure just stood there, and my buddy started to walk over. When he was about 10 yards away, the figure took, as he described, an impossibly long step towards him and let out the same scream my buddy had been hearing. My buddy didn't even say anything. He just turned and sprinted back to ops, never looking behind him. By the time he got back, the screaming had moved back into the woods. He didn't mention it to anyone else, just said that there was a mountain lion in the area and they would need to close the pass until the animal could be located and moved. I'm going to end this entry here since it turned into a huge wall of text. I'm going to be heading out on a yearly training op tomorrow morning, so I'll be gone until next week. I'll be meeting with a lot of former trainers and buddies who work in the areas of the park, and I'll be asking around if there's any stories they'd like to share. I'm so glad you guys have been interested in my stories, and once I'm back from this op, I'll continue to share them.